Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. This is a Sunday strategy session, Confessions of a Recovering Productive Struggler. And so I'm going to pull from chapter 6 of the book and read a little bit of what's there and then discuss it a little bit further here. So the productive struggle is a dynasty fantasy football strategy derived by Ryan McDowell of Dynasty League Football. The strategy is based on the educational concepts where teachers let students struggle and attempt to, quote, engage in making connections to things they already know, think creatively, and try different avenues towards solutions, end quote. That's from the Mind Research Institute, actually. So that's a direct quote sort of from the, from the, I guess, the actual, like, core originator of the productive struggle for educational stuff. All right, so picking back up with the book. The student struggles through the learning process as an educational tool allow the student to learn better over the long term. In other words, the short-term pain of working through a problem will have long-term gains of understanding learning concepts, particularly in the field of mathematics. As applied to Dynasty Fantasy Football, the strategy allows for an initial unsuccessful season in your team building with the aim of delayed gratification to build long-term success. The concept was translated to Dynasty through the startup draft process, where owners will trade down and select players who will not produce in the near term with the hope of long-term production. The strategy says initial struggle combined with an early rookie pick the following draft will set your team on a successful journey in year two and beyond. In my early years as a Dynasty GM, my teams largely adhered to the productive struggle. I'll also note at this point that this was independent of anything. This actually predated the productive struggle as a strategy. I was very much into sort of building youth in long term as early as 2012, which is actually my first draft. So I'll probably go back and revisit that at some point. It's coming up on the 10 year anniversary here. So I actually will go back and revisit that soon. But it's worth noting that my sort of theory on this had gone earlier than the actual productive struggle of the article. My teams would be focused on long-term builds with the aim of winning well into the future. In startup drafts, I sought to be productive by trading down, taking long-term bets, and trying to win in future years. Depth and youth were important factors in the way I would build Dynasty Fantasy Football teams. My teams were dominated by, quote, developmental wide receivers, end quote. The thought of a player retiring on my roster terrified me, and rostering running backs felt like a waste of potential resources that had to be traded at the sight of any possible uptick in trade value. I saw so many other rosters doing the same things, so I thought I had Dynasty figured out. I was wrong. The book then goes through, and I'm not going to read all of them, but it goes through my reasons for my actual 7 reasons why I was wrong. It goes through, and actually this is where I kind of incorporate the stuff from, there was a show, I don't know if it was last week or maybe the week before, where I talked about the June 12th, 2012 was the day the Big Three in OKC walked off the floor, Game 1 of the NBA Finals, with a 1-0 lead, and that's a core of Durant, Westbrook, and Harden, like under 24 years old, and that's as close as they ever got. This is a lot of where that comes from. So I'll sort of walk through here a little bit in terms of what they are, in terms of what the actual thoughts are. I'd rather win. So that's number one. The more I play Dynasty, the less I think Dynasty GMs actually want to win. I think a lot of what happens in Dynasty Fantasy Football is, pretty roster syndrome, right? We can call it roster baiting. We can call it, Twitter modeling, right? I mean, you see all these things of people doing things that are that we know are suboptimal from an odds base, right? Because I think it looks better, right? It's more intriguing to look at, Daryl Williams is less attractive to look at than you know, the thought of Hakeem Butler, right? Right. His, that type of wide receiver coming in and making a big difference, right? Those things, you sort of see those things over and over again. And that's, you know, that's kind of one of the reasons why, people like to look at the sexy wide receiver. They don't necessarily like to look at the actual useful running back. And that's, I think, definitely one of the reasons. The other thing here is, what's your favorite part of Dynasty Fantasy Football? This was a tweet poll, a poll on Twitter by Nick Whalen back in December of 2020. The options were trading, winning a championship, lots of draft picks, a young team with potential. The most common answer was trading, but it was at 39%. So that means 61% of people valued something higher than actually winning a championship. So winning a championship was the plurality, but was actually in the minority of total answers. So when you think about that for a second, that should set alarm bells off in terms of, like, hey, if we're taking a sort of aggressive winning approach, we're probably in a situation where it's a heterodox strategy. I sort of steal this from Benjamin Robinson over Grinding the Mocks. It's a heterodox strategy. You're probably on your own, right? You're probably not out there. You know, it's probably a rare strategy, right? I think that the more and more we do Dynasty, the more and more analytics of Dynasty sort of writes, I believe that to be true, especially with how aggressive we've gotten on elite players and, you know, the willingness to sort of, you know, we're going to do a Sam Hinkie, or to do a Daryl Morey, Sam Hinkie pod here soon. But very much in the lines of, hey, if you don't have superstars, you're not going to win, or your odds of winning are really low. And I've come more and more to believe that than I have in any other time. And I think that's really part of the productive struggle, is you want to build a deep core. I don't think it's necessary, right? That's really one of the things that my data has found, that I've come to reject all this stuff. So I would rather win. And I think a lot of people, that's not why they play Dynasty. So 39% was winning a championship, 27% trading, 17, almost 18% was building a young team with potential. And the last one there was lots of draft picks at 16%. So, you know, when you add up, you know, trading and draft picks, it's actually more than winning a championship, right? So all those things are really interesting there. When you look at it and think about how winning is what we're trying to do, but is actually people's least, you know, not their favorite part of playing Dynasty. So it puts us in a different span. The number two reason, and I think probably the biggest reason why I reject the productive struggle, is I don't believe it's built for modern Dynasty fantasy football. There's a number of reasons why I reject the productive struggle, but this is probably the key one. In Superflex, right, the idea of the productive struggle initially, and I actually had Ryan McDowell on my podcast about a year and a half ago, and we did a show on this, and I actually followed back up with him afterwards because I was sort of interested in, you know, if I had misread the strategy, and his was, you know, hey, we're going to build long-term, right? So in Superflex, I would sort of like veer towards, you know, longer-term quarterbacks because that's the premium position. That's the, really what the productive struggle is aimed at is longevity, right? People think of it as wide receivers over running backs, but really it's longevity. And the longevity is the quarterback position, right? That's the argument. The longevity, in my view, right, if you read this chapter, if you read this AOD in terms of the quarterback chapter, I think if you read last, I think it was last year's AOD as well, some of the quarterback stuff there, I think we're getting much better at the quarterback position. I don't know about the market generally. I think the market generally is probably not, but I think we definitely are. We definitely have an edge, right? We sort of understand, here's what you do, here's what you don't do, and, you know, here's where you can exploit it. You know, in startup drafts, you know, you go up to the very top, right? Because they have a lot of consequence. That's something that's different than AOD from 3 years ago. That's something that's very different than AOD from 3 years ago. We were more like, hey, we'll settle in the teens. You could do that and win. It's a lot harder to do that and win. I think that's the key thing. You know, and we know that you take guys that have done it over guys that haven't, right? You take a guy that has done it once over a guy that hasn't done it at all at the same price. You take a guy that has done it twice over a guy that's done it once at the same price. We definitely take a guy that's done it twice over a guy that hasn't done it at all, right? You start looking at those things, and if you sort of draw from it, which I do in the book, it's the quarterback that is about quarterback 10 in ADP in the offseason that has multiple hits has about the same warp expectation and warp odds as a quarterback 4 in ADP who has zero hits. So when you think about that, you know, and there's examples of that in the past. Baker, you know, Trevor Lawrence didn't get quite that high. Baker's really the most expensive non-producer that we've seen. Yeah, so we sort of know that, and we sort of understand that better and better. I think it's a, you know, we sort of know not to make those mistakes. So the other thing too is understanding, you know, in rookie drafts, right? You can address the position. It's not that I'm anti-youth. It's that I think we need to sort of emphasize youth in the right way, right? It's take shots on Brandon Ayuk. It's take shots on Kadarius Toney. It's take shots like later in the round, right? Instead of, you know, maybe going forward. I know I've talked about this, and some people have pushed back on the idea that, you know, you could go from Sermon to Waddle and Toney. I think if you sort of look at where I had them tiered, if you had gone from, you know, if you were going to take Sermon at, you know, 110, which would have been right after Mac Jones, you know, and move to that early second, that would have been some combination of Bateman, Smith, Toney, right? I think there was another player in there. So, you know, that sort of tier, right? So that's, and again, if you had moved out from 110 to 202, you would have gotten one of those four guys, right? You most likely would have gotten Sermon, Bateman, Smith, or Waddle, right? There's a really good chance of doing that if you'd gone back to the early part of the second round. You know, and just passed on the pick and then gotten a later pick. So I do think more and more of those things, right, looking between profiles. I didn't think Sermon had that same profile, so that's why I didn't do that. But as we can sort of get more and more into this, I think that that's one of the things that we will realize. I don't think the market does those sorts of things, especially a quarterback, right? To be like, yes, we'll take Lawrence, right? Where the right bet is to trade down from, you know, Lawrence, and it's to get Kirk Cousins, and then you add additional picks, you add additional players, you get Andrews, you get Harris through deals coming down, right? You do those sorts of things, and then you go out and be the best team in the league. Right, that's I think how you do it, right? And I wrote about that, how I did that too. So ultimately, the longevity aspect of Dynasty Fantasy Football is of quarterbacks who've already done it, right? So it's quarterbacks in their mid to late 20s that have already done it, in their early 30s who have already done it. It's not young quarterbacks. That's the worst way. If you really want to struggle, if you want to focus on the struggling part of that word, of that phrase, you draft young quarterbacks that haven't done it, and you will darn for certain be more likely to struggle than any other team in the league. You know, so that's really the thing that I, if your argument is, I need a productive struggle because I need to build long-term into the future at the quarterback position, I can already spot the loser in the room. Right. What's the saying? I think it's from Rounders. If you can't spot the sucker in the room in like the first, you know, 30 minutes, you are the guy. Right. Something like that. Right? That's the person that's the sucker in your league. And so that's the stuff that, especially at cost. Now, if you can sort of trade down, right. If last year your solution was to trade from, you know, I don't know, from wherever Lawrence was picking, you could legitimately get two top six picks. I don't think that's a stretch because I did it. If you did that and you went multiple quarterbacks, right, if you took, and I don't know what the exact order of it would have been, but if you had taken, you know, Lance and Wilson or whatever, right, if Fields or, you know, what, two of those three, I think you could do that by getting two top five, top six picks, depending on your format. You know, that would have been more, I think that would have been a better answer to trying to build long-term at the quarterback position than taking Lawrence, because we know that those things are random, right? We know that top 10 quarterbacks perform randomly. We know that ADP isn't predictive, that draft position isn't predictive of success if you're looking just at those top 10 guys, right? It is when you look at the whole round, but when you just sort of snapshot those guys who belong up at the elites, it's really difficult to sort between them, right? We've seen this, right? We've seen, you know, Josh Allen ends up being the best of those top four quarterbacks from his class, right, by far. And he was the last one in rookie drafts, right? By far the last one in rookie drafts. you know, so when you, and again, then he was third, I think he was third behind Mayfield and Darnold, right? And then he was just ahead of Rosen. So you sort of get the idea, right? Like there's a big, there's exploitable efficiencies there that are, it's not building around the quarterback position, right? It's with youth. It's building around the quarterback position with productive guys. And then if you're going to do that, you're automatically going to be productive now, right? Like if you have, not automatically, but you're much more likely to be productive now, right? If you're taking Russell Wilson, if you're taking Matthew Stafford at, you know, plus coming down from Lawrence, right? Or plus coming down from Fields, you're going to be productive right now. You're going to be, you're, that this is your window, right, to do that, you know. So why would you aim to struggle on the rest of your roster, right? That's really the two prongs of that are, I think, the key, which is we know that, you know, long-term productive quarterbacks are quarterbacks that have already done it, especially multiple times, especially even, you know, mid to late 20s is fine, even early 30s is fine. That's why people are souring on Prescott. It's like he's 28. It's perfect. Like this is the window, right? That's the window of quarterback production. We sort of know that, right? And so I think emphasizing that is the most optimal long-term strategy, and it's actually good in now because you can depend on those quarterbacks. So I don't think the productive struggle is really built for modern dynasty fantasy football. It's a relic of one quarterback leagues where you could do this, right? Where you could, I'm not going to take quarterbacks because no one's going to value them. I'm going to take wide receivers and I can figure out quarterback later on. You know, I can spot start Tyler Huntley or whatever, right? I can do those sorts of things and it's not that consequential, right? Or I probably spot start someone better than that, right? It's not that way in Superflex now. So I think it's a much different time, and that's really the reason why it is. The third one is being different is better than blending in. In the series Productive Struggle, McDowell wrote, if the majority of your league is drafting youth or wide receivers early, why go against that? Well, why go against that is because if you're right, it's super consequential. Why go against that? Because you need to be in the top 8.3% of your league to win it. That's why, right? If everyone's playing with the same presumptions, right, and you sort of follow them, it requires you to be better than the other 11 dynasty GMs in your league. If you actually reject the presumptions of other dynasty GMs and you're right, there's massive opportunities there. Right? There's massive opportunities. Like that's how you can build a long-term dynasty. That's how you can build a really elite team. It's by betting on certain presumptions that are different than everyone else is betting on. And if you're right, the consequences of that are huge, right? And then you say, well, okay, well, what happens if you're wrong? Well, you were going to lose 11 out of 12 times anyways, right? So I think actually being different than everybody else, you benefit from a system failure, right? A total collapse of the system. You benefit from, you know, if you're going to pass on running backs early and take a ton of running backs late, you benefit from a season where you see a ton of injuries, right? Where you see 16, 17, 18 guys, starters miss time, miss multiple weeks, right? You benefit from that because that's what everyone else is doing and you weren't, right? That's how you cash in, right? You benefit when you ignore age at wide receiver, right? Because when the same guys are productive over and over and over again, you're Brandon Cooks, you're all these other guys, and you traded, CeeDee Lamb for two firsts and got Brandon Cooks, and Brandon Cooks matched CeeDee Lamb, right? Those two firsts could have been an elite quarterback at some point along the line, right? Like you sort of understand those things. Those are things that aren't blending in, right? Those are standing out. That heterodox strategy thing really sticks in the brain. So, fitting in isn't always a good strategy, right? If you're invited to a crack house, you'll be popular with the addicts if you bring an eight ball. But staying home is a more profitable strategy in the long term. It just is. Another example that's always famous is, you know, if everyone's jumping off a bridge, you're going to do it too. Just because it's popular in the meantime, right? Bell-bottom jeans were popular, you know, when I was in like seventh grade or whatever. Like, and that's, you know, the second time that they've been popular. Just because they're popular doesn't mean they're necessarily a good idea. So building an attractive team to other GMs is playing the wrong game. This similarly goes to that. We are much more capable of projecting production than we are how the market is going to react to that production. Josh Jacobs is a really good example of that. Josh Jacobs, by and large, is of his tiers, and I just cut this podcast, and we'll be releasing it this week, but I just cut the podcast on it about, you know, about his profile and about how he's basically kind of is like really good at a lot of things. Like he's above baseline at a lot of things. When you look at the other guys at his tier, it's like not so much, right? And it's like, huh, like he's actually a decent, in terms of his yards per route run. He's good after contact. Like he does a lot of these things. He breaks tackles at a high rate. Like all these things, you're like, oh, wait, Swift doesn't do that. Some of these other guys don't do that. And it's like, okay, well, what am I, you know, if I can match production at a cheaper price, why wouldn't I do that? Well, everyone else is going the other way, right? Well, okay, there's plenty of ways to cash out on that, right? Like I don't, just because everyone else is going the other way, that means it's actually productive to not do that now. You know, one of the things that, I think that there are ways that the market consistently misses. The market consistently undervalues productive wide receivers, just constantly does. And so what am I to do with that? Right, if I want to build a team that's attractive to other players, am I going to knowingly pass on a productive, undervalued, right, cheap top 24 wide receiver just so I can have a guy that the market might like more in a year from now? I'm not, right? It's much easier to project, hey, DeAndre Hopkins is probably going to come back for like 140, 145 targets and be a top 25 guy. All right, so the market's not going to love that. Okay, right? Like, that's the market's problem, right? That's their problem, not mine, right? That's going to grind out a win for me. And I'm just going to sort of plug and play him and just keep going on about my day. So those things I think are important. I think that, like, as you look at these things, like, you're going to see – you're going to see where other GMs are playing a different thing, right? They're playing for value, right? They're playing to try and react. You know, Jacobs has two top 12 seasons and a top 24 season through three seasons. And the market and you know, just proved that he had top five receiving value in terms of targets, and he actually smashed in terms of targets per route run as well, right? He actually, it wasn't just volume, like he did it actually really efficiently. And J.K. Dobbins is going rounds and rounds ahead of him. What are we doing? And like, what's the basis of that coming off an injury, right? I think that, like, as you look at these things, you see these things and you understand that, hey, there's probably mistakes that are being made. And why would I want to sort of embrace that when I can pass on that, sort of go to more productive profiles, right? Do other things, especially when I can trade them, trade between them and play a more productive game, especially right now. And production in the near term is cheap because you can get wide receivers. You can get Brandon Cooks. You can get Tyler Lockett. You can get DeAndre Hopkins for, you know, late first, early seconds, right? Multiple seconds, like later. You can do those things, right? Why, right? It's really cheap and gettable, like that, much cheaper really than long-term production is, right? If you're sort of to say like, hey, CeeDee Lamb's got a better, Hopkins and Lamb might match for targets over the next year or two, but in 4 years, Lamb's going to be more valuable. Well, who's the guy that's going to be, that's more cost, you know, who costs more now? Well, it's Lamb by a lot, right? Why? Because people are valuing 3, 4, 5 years from now a lot more significantly than they're valuing the current production. You know, I'm not saying that you can always just kick the can and say, all right, like we'll just pick up, you know, that next 2 years from now is DeAndre Hopkins. You can't always do that. But if you just say, all right, we're going to build for depth and build for strength at a cheaper cost, right? You're going to take your shots on Tony. You're going to take your shots on Ayuk. You're going to take your shots on the like, Waddle and those sorts of things. Like, you know, in the second round, you're going to take, right? What's some of our rules? Like you take first round wide receivers in the second round rookie drafts. Like that's an easy rule. Sort of follow that. And I think that like, that's how you can build long-term and play a little bit different of a game. And consistently do that. So, you know, I could do a week long series on being different, but I do think like mind when you're playing a different game than everybody else, just watch and see, because you're probably leaning into production ways that other people aren't. again, that sort of goes along with that is number five. I can sort of combine these into one if I wanted to, but cannot ignore undervalued assets, right? We consistently see this. So I just talked about that. So you know, where you get to a spot where Brandon Cooks is persona non grata at 28, right? DeAndre Hopkins is persona non grata at 28 or 30, whatever he is now. You know, and that's just, it's a consistent pattern. And I think that we, if there's anything we do really well, it's identifying patterns and figure out ways to try and exploit them, right? Take positive EV bets on the patterns that we have seen. And I think it doesn't have to be that complicated, right? And that's, you know, that's the, we make it a lot more complicated than it is, right? And that's the, you know, the beginning of the book is actually a quote from Ingrid Michaelson in this lyric that I just think is amazing. And it's just, let's not make it harder than it has to be, right? Like, some of these things aren't that hard. And I think, you know, we make it harder because we spend a lot of time, you know, we spend basically 2/3 of the year not watching these teams compete. We make it a lot harder than it has to be. You know, this last one here, so there's two more here. Protecting market value is a waste of assets. I simply see this right now, February content's tough for me for a couple of reasons, because I am largely talking about things that I think are in the book. I'm using phrasing and I'm using you know, concepts and theories and stuff that are in the book that I haven't necessarily you know, that maybe everyone hasn't gotten through yet. But I see the more I see the market and the more I see the types of bets I want to make, it's entirely through this light of number six right here, which is protecting market as a waste of assets. And, you know, well, how, you know, and I think it was Clint asked the other day, you know, well, how do you, you know, you consistently don't want to take shots in like ranges where there's not guys, right? Or, you know, wherever we think everyone blends in. And it's like, yes, that's largely true. Because I'd rather, you know, I'd rather move up, right? I'd rather use that glut of spots, right? I'd rather use, you know, round, just sort of ballparking this, 8 through 12 to move up from round, you know, 6 to round 4, right? Like that, that's kind of how I would see, right? That's kind of why I don't like picking in that range, because I'd rather use those assets to get me a top 50 guy, right? And this is another reason why I think this way, right? So, I'll work through this and I'll sort of show you what I mean. A frequent argument in favor of productive struggle is that it is necessary to draft players who will preserve or gain future market value. Trevor Lawrence is a good example in 2021, and I use the example Scott Connor said he's the most insulated rookie quarterback ever, maybe the most insulated rookie quarterback, regardless of whether he produced a top five finish in his career. Throughout the 2021 offseason, Lawrence was a first-round startup pick in Superflex drafts while ranking in the top 10 of the quarterback position. After a disappointing season, his market fell. You know, I sort of generally said that we don't know exactly where it's going to settle out, at least around valuation. And after a disappointing season, there were similar statements made about reduction in his value, right? That, oh, it's not, you know, oh, look, he didn't fall that much. Well, that's maybe true. And that's, Scott didn't say that, by the way. It was somebody else that said that I quoted, you know, as saying, you know, it actually is a account that I like quite a bit. It's Anelli Ticks. Anelly Ticks. This is time for a Trevor Lawrence brain dump. Part of what is so great about drafting T-Law last year was he carried insulated value. That has proven to be true. As he has put together about as bad of a season as imaginable, and yet his value has not dropped that much. Well, there's a couple of faults in that. It has dropped, and right, you, again, we're playing the other game, right, which is what everyone cares about is value. I could have won two more games with a guy like Matthew Stafford, two more games with a guy like Aaron Rodgers, two more games with a guy like Patrick Mahomes. I could have traded Trevor Lawrence for Matthew Stafford in a first. I could have traded Trevor Lawrence for at least Aaron Rodgers in a first. I could have traded probably a first and Trevor Lawrence for Patrick Mahomes. Right, probably the late first or the early first. Like that's probably something I could have gone to Allen. I could have gone to Prescott. Right, I would have been winning a game, game and a half, two more games. Right, so that sort of puts that there first. And now I can't do those trades. I just can't do those trades. I can't trade from Trevor Lawrence in a first to get Mahomes. Can't do it. Not gonna happen. You know, and I can't probably do that for some of the other guys that we talked about. You know, I can't pull off that same Stafford trade. So not only have I lost, yes, I've lost value. Yes, I've lost a year of production. I'm in the prime of some of these other guys. I could have waited a year and bought for a lower cost on Lawrence in startup drafts. Absolutely could have done that. And for what end? Right? Like for something that was told to be true to not be true, which is that he's very insulated. He was insulated until he didn't produce. They didn't produce, and now he's going down, and it's probably like a round and a half. And that might not seem like a big deal, but in practicality terms, it really is, right? It's a lot. It's very difficult to pivot up to Mahomes or pivot up to some of these other guys from where he is now versus where he was, right? And I think it matters more in existing leagues than it does in real leagues, which is even worse because that's what you were guarding against. Right? That's even what you were guarding against. You know, so I just, I look at that stuff and it's just mistakes that I don't think that, you know, the young quarterback thing, it's like the easiest way, to not a playoff spot is to build around them. You know, when I was playing a lot of fantasy baseball, some of the guys that I listened to would always say, you know, the road to fourth place is paved with closers of the future, right? Like you could load up on them and all of a sudden, like you just wouldn't, you know, you would lose that category of saves, right? That's absolutely true with young quarterbacks, 100% true. And, you know, you lost basically a whole year with Lance. You lost a whole year with Lawrence. You know, Fields was okay. You lost a whole year with Wilson, although I don't think people were making that argument for him. And heck, the best one was Mac Jones, right, who you could have gotten much later. Again, I'm not sort of touting that I would have done that as a direct pivot, but you sort of get the idea, right? Like, we're bad at predicting what's going to happen with these guys. And so I think that's a really important thing when you think about it. And for all of those reasons, I reject building for the long term as this productive struggle as a viable strategy, because I'd rather win. I'd rather be different and win. I'd rather be different. I'd rather be cheaper. I'd rather be more productive. I'd rather be more predictable. You know, I could have gone on forever about this. You know, people worry about consistency. That's ridiculous, right? We know it's ridiculous. We reject consistency, right? And then we get values because of it. You know, Brandon Cooks has been inconsistent for a decade, pretty close to a decade now, right? That's why he's always been underrated, or, you know, for the last, I guess, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years, to be fair, 3 or 4 years, really, to be more fair. You know, but since he came in 2014, right, he was really high at first, and then he sort of fell down a little bit. And, you know, he's basically been essentially like the DJ Moore. Right, it'd be like if DJ Moore kept doing what DJ Moore does, he'd be Brandon Cooks in 5 years, and you know, that's not inconsistent. That's actually remarkably consistent, and you know that. But people are worried about this week to week thing, which we kind of reject as being, you know, I don't know if it's wasteful or a myth, and. Because we reject that, we're able to sort of embrace different profiles at a lesser cost, right? We're able to be in on profiles that the market discounts, right? Systematically discounts. And right? And that's a flaw, right? So we could be like everyone else, or we could be different. And I'd rather be different, right? Because we know those things are more successful long term, or they're not less successful. And so if they're not less successful and they're cheaper consistently, it's a huge advantage. So all those reasons are the reasons why I've really rejected this productive struggle. I think it's really cheap. You know, one of the things I did in the book, I talked about a team where I actually traded a bunch of stuff for like win now stuff. So I'll do some more stuff about that later. You know, and some other things, it's stuff I wouldn't have done in prior years, you know, and the like. I just do want to say about the productive market thing, and I'll use an example of what I did today. I don't like to be in the range of tight ends that blend in. So I know Clint, I didn't finish this, the thought I had about what Clint said earlier. So I want to finish this now. I didn't like being, I generally think like from tight end, I don't know, let's call it like 8 to tight end 18. It's really flat, right? So unless you find like a difference making profile in that range, there's not a ton of sense in investing in the high end of that range. It's kind of like some of our rookie draft stuff, where, hey, why would I spend a quarterback at 101 when the guy at, you know, 106, you know, 104 and 106 is similarly odds, and I got to take two shots instead of one, right? That's very much, I believe that to be true at tight end. I believe that to be true in the rookie sense of running backs, of quarterbacks, top 10 quarterbacks. I believe that to be true in the veteran tight end market. I think it's very flat after like 6 to 8, depending on the year. And if you don't get guys that stick out in that range, there's no sense in really elevating up unless you're playing a different game. If you're trying to innings eat in a tight end premium league, I get that. I do think that's a viable strategy in some tight end premium leagues that might give you a boost to a guy like Fant, where he might not necessarily have that in his profile to be an elite finisher. But I do think, by and large, you know, if you're looking at some of these guys, that there's not a huge, huge difference in that range, right? Cole Kmet and maybe Dalton Schultz, right? It's a lot of variance between the two of them about who's going to finish better. If Cole Kmet outfinished Dalton Schultz next year, it shouldn't be terribly surprising. And a lot of the guys in that range are the same way, right? If any guy produces like a top 3 finish in touchdowns, he's going to be a top 6 to 8 finisher, right? No matter whether he, you know, whether he's got 45 targets or whether he's got, you know, 110 targets, right? If he's, we've seen this with Tanyan, right? Like there's a lot of the stuff is, it's tough to sort of order out in advance. But what I think we can do is a couple of things, right? You don't bet on the beginning of the flat. You wait to the end, right? Maybe you wait to the end and do it twice, right? In sort of flat ranges. And the other thing you do is you trade out of the range, right? So you trade, you know, the move from Fant to Goddard is valuable. I think that is a valuable strategy. I traded a first in Kmet for Goddard, right? I wanted to get sort of out of that, what I think is a flat tier, up to a tier where Goddard should be, which is, and I'm not even sure he fits there sort of by the ADP numbers. But when you look at him, he's baby Andrews. Him and Andrews are very similar in terms of what they were doing on low volume. And, you know, if they see an uptick, you know, if they throw the ball 100, 120 more times than they did last year, or even if they throw it like a little bit more and he's running 80% of the routes, which he wasn't doing when Ertz was there, but was doing when Ertz wasn't there. That's a top 3 type profile that totally in its range of outcomes. So that's really one of the things like I want to sort of protect against, protect against preserving market value in the future by giving myself liquid assets, right? So, and I could go through how I accumulated some of these deals, right? Those were deals that I did in a startup draft last year. I just traded down, accumulated them. You know, I gave myself a two-way out, and now I'm starting to spend them, right? It's a mid-first. I think it's 107, 6, 8, something like there, right in the middle of the round, plus Kmet for Goddard. I think it was 107. And that was in a trade down that I moved. You know, I think I moved from round I don't even remember what it was. I think it was like round 6 to round 8 or something like that, right? It was in a flat range, but I got a core asset out of it, right? And so, okay, I can move back in that range and take, you know, a much higher value pick. Sure. You know, if you're going to pay me to move back in the range, yes, like we'll do that. Right. And so then when it really matters, I can identify the spot later on and pay up for that and sort of use that capital to sort of when it's easier to identify. Right. So those are sort of the things. And again, that stuff I'll work more through. But I do think sometimes it's hard at this time of the calendar to talk about some of the concepts that I've written about because I sort of understand them. You know, I've written about them for a year. I've published them and people are still, you know, on chapter three. And so I figured I would jump to the kind of the end, which is, I think, a lot of my brainchild, and just sort of give you, you know, some of the reason why some of the, you know, some of the stuff that I'm talking about in our group chats and in other pods and stuff like that, why that is, why I think, you know, why it is that I think that way, I guess you could say. So, you know, so if so, I hope that helps in terms of some of the questions that we've been getting in the group chat. You know, if you're not in the group chat, this is some of the stuff that we're talking about. You know, so it's, you know, this is a good opportunity to sort of get a preview of some of the stuff that we talk about and apply. It's all good conversation. So lots of it's good conversation. You know, the other stuff is usually me, you know, talking about basketball or something like that or curling. But yeah, so you can come on and join us in there if you're not, if you are, you know, I appreciate everyone in there and it's always good. It's always a good topic debates. And we've been talking about a lot of good stuff. So always when I can incorporate, you know, the triad, you know, the podcast with that and the book, it's always good stuff. So this is, it's not a good opportunity. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. I am also in probably going to give it another week, maybe two. Well, I'll do like a thread thing where people can comment and, hey, here's questions I have from the book. And I'll do like a Q&A sit down type deal. I got to get, I told my editor that we're going to do a pod too. And we just haven't done it yet. So we'll do that at some point, probably in the next, it might even be next week. So might be next Sunday. So we'll get that all figured out. But you can look forward to that. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.